Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, about how many Jews were there in Spain and Portugal at the time of the Inquisition, and what happened to them? Jeannie Milgrom was born in Havana, Cuba, into a Roman Catholic family of Spanish ancestry, but from a very early age felt a deep tie to Judaism. After formally converting, and in an unparalleled work of genealogical research, she was able to fully document her unbroken maternal lineage going back as far as 1430 to pre-Inquisition Spain and Portugal, proving that she's a descendant of forced converts. Since then, she's dedicated her life to researching and transmitting information about the crypto-Jews and helping others in their journey to trace their own heritage. This week, Jeannie is speaking with us about the history of the crypto-Jews in Latin America and their situation today.
Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Jeannie.
My pleasure, Linda. Thank you so much.
We're going to talk today about crypto-Jews, especially in Latin America. Now, the first thing I would like you to explain is some vocabulary, because I don't know if our listeners are familiar with the difference between the terms converso, marrano, crypto-Jew, and b'nai anusim. Could you explain them?
Yes, I will definitely. So back in the day, historians, when they started writing about the converted Jews of the Inquisition, they used the term Marranos. One of the most famous books is written, I believe, by Cecil Roth, called The Marranos. And so when they went into finding our history, they realized that the converted Jews to Catholicism were called Marranos. And Marrano is actually, in Spanish, marrano, which means pig. So pig was not a word that the Christians were calling the Jews. It has become offensive to use it in our everyday language, because the marrano was a word that the Jews called each other when they were sincere converts. In other words, if you as a Jew converted to Catholicism, and you converted, really converted, to be Catholic versus Catholic hiding, then the other Jew would call you a marrano. So as many of us, like me, with this kind of ascendancy from these Jews that were hiding, we started coming out into the world, we took great offense at being labeled marrano. So we stopped using this word. Historians have actually another word that you didn't mention. Historians make a distinction between new Christians and old Christians. The old Christians were the always Catholic, never Jewish, and the new Christians were the Jews that had converted to Christianity. So many times in the records in Portugal, you actually see this person is a half a new Christian and half old Christian. That means that the marriage was mixed. So that's something that when you see historians or people writing academically, I won't use historians, academically on this topic, that's what they use. Converso is the term for anyone that converted. It would be a Muslim that converted or anybody, but a converso is a convert. So that word is used also, but it's so broad that we prefer to use the term crypto-Jews. Crypto meaning hidden, Jewish, the Jews that were hidden. So this is a term that we prefer to use these days, and I like to refer to myself as a descendant of crypto-Jews. I am not a crypto-Jew because I'm not in hiding. I am a descendant of the Jews that were hiding. And the last term in Hebrew, b'nai anusim, is a term where is mostly used in Israel. So anusim means the forced, people that were forced. B'nai Anusim means the children of the forced. And it's in Hebrew, it's not a term that we use here in the United States. So basically, with all of this political correctness, people pretty much settled on crypto-Jews.
Even though some of these people may be descended from true converts, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. It could be, but look, there are some countries like in Brazil, and they don't mind calling themselves Marranos. You know, they don't really, I have a problem with it, and so do countless of thousands of others, but some don't.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fine. So, you know, they can call themselves that if they wish, but I don't want to go around myself calling myself a pig. It's not something I wanted to. So we all settle on crypto-Jews.
Okay, so mainly we're going to talk about the crypto-Jews in Latin America, but were they also present in other places because Spain had colonies in Asia and in Africa? Did this phenomenon travel there too?
Yeah, absolutely. So what happened is that you have to understand how they got there, and you have to look at the diaspora of the crypto-Jews. And right now there's a digitization project that I spoke about at other times where we're trying to digitize the archives of the Inquisition. And the reason that we're trying to do that is not only so that we can find the genealogies of the crypto-Jews, but so that we can follow their diaspora. Because only by following their diaspora are you able to follow the community. So, for example, let's talk about the New World, Mexico. The crypto-Jews were not allowed officially to leave Portugal, but they did. And they left Portugal pretending to be not Jewish and old Christians. And they got on ships and they went over to Mexico. So this was happening in droves in the 1500s. And then these Jews that came over settled in the little villages in the mountains, and the Inquisition set up shop in Mexico City. So they went back to hiding, and they became crypto-Jews, and then they started walking up towards the United States, and those communities today that claim to have crypto-Jewish roots in, let's say, Denver, in the Southwest, Texas, all of these people are from these Mexican Jews. So then they also walked south, and they went to Honduras, Nicaragua, Guatemala, El Salvador, Panama. And so the communities that are now coming out from all of these little countries were people coming out from the Mexico Inquisition.
So they went from Portugal to Mexico?
Yeah, they went from Portugal to Mexico.
They didn't go from Spain?
No, because normally the way that the diaspora went is that Spain had their expulsion in 1492. Then people went over to Portugal, and from Portugal they would go to Spain, by and large. I'm sure some left from Spain, but not too much the ones that we know of that were going to Mexico.
Well, I'm surprised. I'm just surprised they went from Portugal, say, to Mexico rather than to Brazil.
Right, because then we'll talk about the other diaspora, because there was many things going on. So
Okay. They
went, and so they settled in this, like, upper region of Latin America, but the Inquisition was hunting them down from Mexico. So, for example, if you are a crypto-Jew descendant living in Nicaragua or living in El Salvador or any of these communities, you would be searching for your roots in Mexico, in those Inquisition documents. So there was a huge diaspora also leaving Portugal and going down to Recife, Brazil. And then in Recife, Brazil, that's where you had all the communities that are up and down Brazil. And those, even in the 1600s, came up to the United States and founded the community that's in New York of the Spanish Portuguese. So Portugal had all of those people coming. There was another diaspora coming from Cadiz, Spain, and those settled in the north of South America. So those mostly are the ones that came in and settled in the mountains of Bolivia, Peru, Colombia, Cartagena, they came in through the top, Venezuela, and all the little islands in between. So this is how these people come to be where they are.
Do you have any idea how many there were originally altogether?
Well, historians do not agree on this at all. But the consensus is that the Iberian Peninsula, this is the safe consensus, had 300,000 Jews. 100,000 left, and they became the Sephardim of today, Turkey, Greece, those Ottoman Empire Jews that became the Sephardim that you know about. There was 100,000 that stayed and fully assimilated to Catholicism, and 100,000 that continued practicing their religion underground. And so we are looking at those 100,000 and their descendants.
So what connection did they maintain with Judaism throughout the centuries? They considered themselves Catholic, I'm sure, but did they continue to have some kind of Jewish practices?
They considered themselves Catholic at all, Linda, at all, maybe not. I have studied the Inquisition files of Lima, Peru, and we're looking already in the late 1600s, 1700s, and they are still practicing. They are still not eating pork. They're still being pulled into the courts for wearing a clean shirt on Shabbat or for not cooking on the Sabbath. And this was happening in Mexico. It was happening in Lima. They were very staunch until about the mid-1700s, and then they just gave up.
So then until that time, until the mid-1700s, did they consider themselves Jewish? Did they say, we're Jewish and this is why?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. They were just about doing everything that they could underground. They considered themselves Jewish. I've been reading these Inquisition records from Chile. For example, Chile, which is a big country, did not have a court, but they had an office. So the Inquisition, like in Chile, they would hunt the people down, and then they would question them and then send them to Lima for sentencing. And pretty much like that, Brazil, being so huge, did not. They would question them and send them to Lima for sentencing. So the two courts in South America, or in Latin America, you had Mexico City, which was huge. You had Lima, Peru, and you had Cartagena, Colombia. And in the other cities and countries, you had offices with, let's say, questioners and inquisitors.
So what happened in the middle of the 1700s to change that?
You know, I think they gave up. I saw it by my own family in Spain and Portugal. You stopped seeing them getting caught. I don't think that they became any better at hiding who they were. I just think that people got tired. My own family they stopped getting caught. I no longer saw them in the Inquisition records. They just kind of, you know, moved into Catholicism and kept some of these customs. A custom that I never saw in my family, but I do hear it day in and day out in Latin America, was the custom of continuing to light candles inside a closet or in a garage. I never saw that in my family, but that seemed to be very rampant in Latin America. Friday nights.
Were there any cases of isolated communities that were very isolated that continued to practice Judaism as they remembered it, like what happened in Belmonte, Portugal, just little isolated communities?
No, Belmonte, Portugal and Bragança, Portugal were pretty much unique in that. And there is a community in Colombia called Antioch. And in Antioch, everybody knows that they are in that community and they descend from crypto-Jews. But they were not practicing fully like the Belmonte Jews or the Braganza Jews until the 1920s. Until today, actually. So, for example, let's talk about El Salvador. El Salvador has about six communities of people that have returned. They are One's called Armenia, one's called, and they have different names, Punto de Libertad. There's about six communities. And hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people belonging to these communities and trying to keep the laws of Kashrut. Many of them only eat fish. They won't even because they can't find a meat that's shechted or slaughtered properly. So a lot of these communities have people that are returning. Nicaragua has them. Guatemala has them. Ecuador. I was invited to one of these communities in Ecuador years back. And I couldn't believe when I walked into the hall, there was over 300 people there of their community waiting to hear me. And the women wearing all covered their hair, the long dresses. It was impressive. So all of these communities are up and down Latin America still today.
So what has prompted these communities to go back to Judaism?
You know, I'm not sure. I can only tell you that when I returned, it was because of a deep feeling that I had in my soul that I didn't belong to the Catholic people and that, you know, Judaism and the Jewish people were my people. And so I can't, you know, a lot of people ask me about this. And it's if you don't feel it, you can't explain it. That's like, you know, if you've never cut your hand, you can't explain how it feels to cut your hand.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can say it's painful. You can say, but you can't explain the burning, the itching. And the same thing here. You can't explain the burning in the soul. And with the people in Latin America, they're a lot closer to it than I was. In other words, I had to literally go way back to find my, let's say, Jewish ancestors. But these people in Latin America, they have a couple hundred years on it because they only have to go back to like 1600 versus having to go back to 1400 to find their Jewish relatives. So there may be more customs. If you look at some of the graves in certain cemeteries in Mexico, you see the cross and little stars of David drawn in the corner or a menorah drawn in the corner. So these people are now returning because of these burnings in their soul. Guatemala, I went to speak at a community that was lovely. I have never seen anybody more fervent than those people there. It couldn't have been more than 25. And they were just burning for the Judaism. So I've met these people in Uruguay, Ecuador. I've spoken to them in Peru, Guatemala. I've spoken to them in El Salvador. And they're just incredibly fervent. I recently joined the board of Kulanu, an organization in the United States that reaches out to help these communities around the world that might be needing assistance, whether it's for Siddurim or for money for getting kosher food or whatever the community needs. They come to us, we review it, and we help the community, and this is coming from donation. All of this work that I've been doing and visiting this community has never been attached to any organization. I have felt usually that organizations, by and large, are limiting because when you're an individual, you don't have to, let's say, adhere to a certain philosophy, whether it's being too religious or not religious enough. And, you know, frankly, I am a religious Jew. I observe the Sabbath. I'm a traditional, what I guess they call a modern Orthodox Jew. But, you know, those are my personal preferences. That's who I am from a spiritual point of view. But the way that I see the returning, people that are returning, I just want them to return to the Jewish people, Linda. I don't care what they eat, honestly. You know what I'm saying? I don't care what they're wearing. I don't care what they eat. I want them to marry each other because that's important for the continuity. But I'm not concerned if they call themselves Reform or Conservative. I hate those labels. You know, so that's what I liked about Kulanu, is that they respect the community in place, whatever it is.
Do these communities in Latin America that you told us about have connections with each other?
Very little, because here they are returning to the Jewish people after 500 years, and they are just in the same bickering mode, for lack of a better word, as everybody else, meaning you're not religious enough, you're too religious, you wear a black hat, you shouldn't wear a black hat. So I find that they generally stay away from each other and back to same place. And that alone, by the way, tells me that they're real Jews.
Is there anything else you'd like to add that we might have left out?
Oh, I do want to add that the top Jewish demographer in the world right now, Dr. Sergio de la Pergola, who lives in Israel, has come out on a limb and stated that there's 50 million people in the world. He came out in a conference a couple of, like last year, I believe, and he literally used the word 50 million. He's a very serious and academic, and everybody gasped in the audience, including myself, because we couldn't believe that he went out on a limb. That doesn't mean people with direct maternal lineages like me. That just means people that can claim ancestry from the Iberian Jews. 50 million people.
And that's only the Iberian Jews.
The Iberian Jews, right. Mm-hmm. Spain or Portugal, correct.
Well, thank you very much, Jeannie.
It was my pleasure. Anytime.
If you would like to know more about Jeannie's work or hear her on previous English Corner programs, please see the links on this page. Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is English Corner at RadioSephirah.com. See you next week.